Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Chris Nichols. We've finally gotten a slight break in the weather, and it's helped firefighters across the region get a better handle on the many blazes they've been battling across the state, including the Crozier Fire burning just east of us in El Dorado County, where the evacuation zone was reduced Sunday and some folks were allowed to return home. Unfortunately, there are many people affected by the Park Fire who will never see their homes again. The Park Fire, which began in Upper Bidwell Park, east of Chico, was caused by arson and destroyed 637 structures. And it could continue to burn for months. Joining us to talk about what that means is pyrogeographer Zeke Lunder. He's the founder of Deer Creek Resources, which does wildfire management for landowners, and The Lookout, a website that provides reports and resources on wildland fires throughout the region. Lunder lives and works in Chico and saw the initial smoke from the Park Fire when it started on July 24th. Zeke, welcome to Insight.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Okay, before we get started, I'm going to need you to tell us, what is a pyrogeographer?
Well, pyrogeographers, we kind of connect the dots between all these disparate topics and bring them in a kind of place-based fashion back to fire. So, you know, in this episode, you've talked about salmon, you've talked about housing, and all those things. There's a relationship between all these topics and fire on the landscape. And so geographers use the tools of mapping and data analysis and all these other kind of tools of the social scientist to understand and place a topic in context, in its spatial context. So as a pyrogeographer, I'm supposed to kind of look at how these things connect and then use my tools of mapping and narrative and everything else to communicate that with people.
Well, I know you've been monitoring the Park Fire, Zeke, and can you tell us what was the initial challenge with that fire? Why was it so difficult to get under control?
Well, for starters, we were coming out of the three hottest weeks on record. Like here in Chico, we had days that were, you know, 108. And then like on days it was 102, we're like, oh, it's only 102 today. It's not bad. And so we had this incredibly dry weather. And then we didn't have a lot of wind, but we had some steady wind the day that the fire took off. One of the things about extreme heat is it makes it really hard for firefighters to operate, you know, just physically. And the terrain where the fire took off, you know, Upper Bidwell Park, it's really rugged. And, you know, one of the only roads up into the first ridge that the fire ran up onto, you know, it only took a few minutes for the fire to run kind of from the bottom of the hill to the top. And that ridge, it's just kind of lava rock, and it's a popular hiking trail, but it's kind of like the surface of the moon. And one thing that firefighters say around here is that, like, this landscape helps you better understand what 1 mile an hour or 2 miles an hour means in a vehicle. So kind of right off the bat, they weren't going to get fire engines up to the active part of the fire fast enough to stop it. So they had a whole bunch of air tankers on it. And I kind of came home and grabbed my son, and we went up to the park and watched the air show. And at one point there was, you know, six or seven air tankers and two helicopters. But the terrain here is there's this large landform that runs from up around Red Bluff all the way down to about Paradise. It's called the Tuscan Formation, which is just this big volcanic mud flow that's dissected with all these deep creek canyons. And it's pretty much impossible when a fire is kind of running across that to get ahead of it. Just, it takes a long time to get in there. Even with their air tankers, you know, if they drop on the fire, oftentimes there's kind of this eddy effect on these canyon bluffs where the retardant, there'll be kind of holes in the retardant line just as it kind of swirls around these drop-offs. So, and additionally, that whole area hadn't really had fire for, you know, decades. So it was this mix of super dry grass, heavy brush, and then even as you get up a little higher, gray pine and thick live oak. And so the conditions and the terrain and the fuel and everything were just kind of well aligned for the fire to grow explosively.
Zeke, I appreciate your descriptive nature there. The surface of the moon really gives me a picture of what we're talking about and some of the challenges and why firefighters could not get this under control. Now, the Park Fire, it sort of blew up again. Tell us, over the last couple of weeks, what was the cause of it expanding again, sort of going to life again?
Well, one of the reasons was just that the initial run of the Park Fire, it kind of blew up through the foothills and through kind of a grassland savanna, we call it. So it ran quickly through grass and kind of light brush and blue oak woodland, kind of similar to what you'd see, say, around like El Dorado Hills, kind of low to mid foothills. And then eventually it lay down a bit, and then it got up into timberland up kind of in the foothills of Mount Lassen. And that timberland is on a flat ridge top that's bisected by kind of the headwaters of a lot of these creeks that become the rugged canyons farther down. And so the terrain there also is really difficult in that, you know, bulldozers could work on the flatter tops of the ridge, but the drop-offs into the canyons were difficult. And in particular, the Mill Creek Canyon, it's one of the kind of more rugged places in northeastern California, where it drops a couple thousand feet from the flat ridge top down. And it's kind of a V-shaped canyon. And during that kind of period of like around the 27th, the last week of July, basically, the fire really kind of, we had monsoon, the moisture from the monsoon in the Pacific down around Arizona and Four Corners, it moved in, and that moisture kind of raised humidity levels and dropped the temperatures and gave us some cloud cover. And when that happens, it's real typical for kind of midsummer fire behavior. You go from really critical conditions to kind of a lull, and things get smoky and the fire doesn't really breathe very well. And so the exact same thing happened on the Dixie Fire in the last week of July, where it ran really hard for a week, and then the last week of July it kind of laid down, and then it came back to life in August. So what happened here was the fire became really well established in Mill Creek, but it wasn't really moving very quickly up the canyon. But there was no real safe way to fight it in the canyon because it was so smoky. So the crews, you know, the hotshot crews, the hand crews that usually work in the most difficult terrain, they weren't going to go down in there. And then talking to some of the crews, you know, the night of the 4th, we got infrared imagery, and it showed that the fire had kind of, even though it was moving slowly, it had moved into this position in the bottom of this side drainage in Mill Creek, where it was really well set up for explosive growth. And so then on the 5th, we got big winds, and it can be subtle changes. It wasn't like we had this like hurricane. It was just that the change in the pattern allowed all the smoke to lift out of the canyon and for the fire to really breathe. And so the fire charged up out of there, and it burned over the rim. And it spent the next couple of days gobbling through some of the kind of most extraordinary old growth forest left in northeastern California in Mill Creek Canyon. And then it kind of ran out of slope, you know, burned to the tops of the hills, and the weather changed again. And so now the fire is kind of behaving itself, and temperatures are cooler, and the fire's really slowed down.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Zeke Lunders, who lives in Chico and studies the spread of wildfires. He's been monitoring the recent blazes across Northern California. Zeke, I was wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about the company you founded, Deer Creek Resources. What kind of service do you provide, and who do you work with?
Yeah, so Deer Creek, my wife and I founded it in 2011, and it kind of grew out of work I started doing in 1999, which was GIS mapping, so digital mapping of forestry and wildfire. And so that original work that I started in 99 kind of rode this initial wave of when they first started doing digital mapping actually in fire camp and bringing big map printers out to the fire camp. And so Deer Creek continues to do fire mapping. You know, we've got equipment assigned right now on the Park Fire and also on the Crozier Fire. And so we send out trailers out to fire camps and provide equipment and people to kind of help the fire teams manage their intel and make maps of the fires. And in the off season, we do pre-fire planning. So our customers are people like the American River Parkway Foundation, where they Now, during the pandemic, there were so many people living in the parkway, there were a lot of fires that were started. And so they recognized that they needed to do a thorough plan to reduce wildfire hazards in the parkway. So for that particular project, we did a really thorough survey of the entire 25 miles of the parkway, and we identified places where there was potential for human-caused fires to do the most ecological damage. So that's kind of that pyrogeography where we're looking at the riparian forest and where you've got mature cottonwood trees and where you've got kind of botanically important or interesting areas that could be harmed by wildfire. And then we prioritize and say, like, hey, you should weed eat this area between the homeless camp and the riparian forest, or you should graze it with goats, or you should do prescribed fire over here because you've got a lot of star thistle that is degrading the native grass habitat. So that's one example. We've done that kind of work for Yuba County, Plumas County, El Dorado County, town of Truckee, Tahoe Basin, worked in the Klamath Mountains. We've worked doing that kind of work for the city of Redding, city of Chico, working on projects right now in Shasta County. But that's kind of our bread and butter in the winter is to go out and use the tools of a geographer to analyze potential fire behavior. And then we run numeric computer models to really nail down the hazard. We use LIDAR imaging, like laser scanning from airplanes, to create models of the fuels. And then we can simulate hazard and create scenarios to look at where the highest hazard would be. And then we can use that to develop projects, fuel reduction projects that will be kind of the most impactful, that'll target the areas that have the biggest benefit to the greatest number of houses or other assets that are threatened by wildfire.
Now, Zeke, in addition to that service, you also founded a website called The Lookout. It provides reports and resources on wildland fires throughout the region. For many people in the foothills, The Lookout is required reading whenever a fire pops up. Tell us more about how and why you started that website.
Yeah, so The Lookout is viewer-supported, and it kind of got started around 2020, really. There was a documentary that was being made about the campfire. And as part of that, I went down to interview the retired chief of CAL FIRE for the documentary crew. And I was talking to one of the reporters, one of the documentarians, and said, you know, I really want to become a reporter. I feel like the media is consistently getting messaging wrong on fire, or that they're telling these kind of tired tropes or narratives that consistently, frame the topic in a really narrow fashion, where the homeowners are always the victims and the fire is always the villain and the heroes are always the firefighter. And it just, and it still seems to me that for the most part, that media is not really asking the right questions about fire or asking questions that are going to help us evolve a relationship that's more based on the reality of what fire does on the landscape.
Zeke, we've only got a minute or so, but in that brief amount of time, I mean, give us some of the questions that the media should be asking. What are some new questions that should be asked?
I think one question is just, we have a lot of people who live in extremely high hazard areas, and we know they're high hazardous. The insurance companies are telling us they're hazardous because they've done the math and are not renewing those policies. And so one question is, well, can we stop building in these places? Can we, after a fire burns a town down, can we think about how to better rebuild before we just go back and rebuild the same footprint? Maybe we could make structural changes in the layout of the town before we rebuild it. What role does prescribed fire have to play in all of this? What are the limits on our ability to manage fuels in the wildlands? How might forestry become more fire resilient? Those are some of the big ones.
Well, I think all of those are important, and connecting with individuals like you to learn more about what's happening in the foothills with these major fires. Zeke, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Insight.
Thanks. It was nice to be with you.
That's Zeke Lunder. He's a pyrogeographer and founder of Deer Creek Resources and the website The Lookout. You can find out about both of those on our website, capradio.org. That's Insight for today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the conversation, email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Sarit Leshinsky and Jen Picard. Insight's technical director and audio engineer is Mark Jones. Our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Chris Nichols, in for Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.